to the Great Escape Minute. Today's episode is episode 77 of the Daily Podcast, where we dig into the Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again on this lovely Tuesday is Nick Rehack of French Toast Sunday. It's the same thing, right?
It's all the same. They're both edible.
Yeah, exactly. Coast? Coast is edible? What's coast?
Yeah, you can, if it's like a crust of toast, you put it together. I got some coast over here.
Oh, okay. All right. You see, you're the expert on that. Well, welcome back, Nick, on that note.
Thank you for having me back.
No problem. So episode 77 begins with Colin continuing to inspect the camera and goes all the way till we see Danny cruising all the way into the end of the tunnel on a trolley. So yesterday's episode, we ended it off with Henley entering the Forger's area and giving Colin a camera, which he started to inspect and said his favorite line, splendid, splendid, and was checking out his camera without any film. So who knows? At some point he'll get some film. I hope. I'm assuming he gets film because, you know, otherwise it would be a little difficult for them to do this. Cool. So, We ended yesterday's episode with Colin starting to say, this should do very, and today we get the final word on that, and he says, nicely. which I guess is a completest way of looking at it, you know, that this is the camera that I wanted. And then
it's almost a little anticlimactic, too. Nicely. Like, oh, not great. No, it's like, it's going to be fine.
No, but he's a guy who's splendid. So it's not as if he would say, this is excellent. This is superb. This is, you know, we'll get out of thesaurus and think of all the different exclamations that one could possibly say here. For Colin, nicely is a little bit forceful, I guess you can say.
Maybe even, because he even looks like he's trying to restrain himself, like, don't give it all away.
Possibly. You never know. You never know. And then we hear noise from above, and then you basically see Henley and, I think his name is Smitty, who's sitting next to him. They both look up, and you don't, Blythe doesn't even look up. You know, and you see the way that the ceiling is moving. There's like a lot of noise. And it's as if it's rippling, like if you throw a stone, you know, you try and skip a stone on a pond, you know, in water, mm-hmm. So it like ripples. So it looks like it's rippling, which is just amazing to me because you'd never think that this would happen. And you know, Henley just his once again we discussed this yesterday about with Hilt that his eyes are just popping out, but Henley's eyes now pop out. You know, he's like in complete. He's completely astonished as to what's going on, and he just looks at Colin, who looks up and knows how to answer. You know, because Colin didn't even look up at the ceiling. He's already used to the fact that he goes, "Oh, those are Ashley Pitt's men." You know, he requests permission to dispose some of his dirt in our attic, and that's what they're doing, which is pretty funny that this is what they're actually doing. You know, they're putting dirt in the attic, so I guess it's sort of, you know, an upside down type of tunnel, because usually, you know, you're taking the dirt out and using the wood to shore up the dirt so that it doesn't fall. But here, you're using the wood, you're using the dirt to fill up the wood. You know, as a blocker. It's which seems like some of it a waste.
Great insulator.
True. Well, except for the fact that you see the whole building move.
Which is, you wouldn't, I mean, I'm really surprised that A, they didn't cut to an outside shot to kind of show you maybe a little bit of shifting or even a guard like noticing it but looking away. But then maybe that might have been played too comically, so they didn't do it that way.
Right.
But even so, you think maybe a little dust would have fallen down onto the table just enough to hint at like there's a lot of dirt up there. Well, but instead,
insulated it really well. You know, when the Germans built this barracks, whether it's the, you know, whether it's the library or some other thing, they definitely did. They put each of the slabs right one next to the other, the slats. You know, they nothing is getting through, not even grains of sand. This could be actually used for a commercial. You know, for the building company, the construction company. We're
new lumber liquidators.
There you go. We make sure that even if you fill the ceiling, if you fill your attic with dirt, that not a single grain will fall out. And I mean,
plant trees in your attic.
That's right. I mean, the amount of heftiness. I mean, you see the lights are swiveling because there's so much. I mean, I'd be scared to either sit down underneath, and I'd also be scared to be one of the people disposing of the dirt up there.
Yeah, and you can even tell, like, it would be really interesting too if the forgers didn't look up and they all kept their eyes down too and were as calm as cool. But even they take a look and they're like, ah, that's a bit much up there, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, oh, no.
No, but only one of them. Oh, actually, no, I see another one also looking up. Basically, Colin's the only one that doesn't look up. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Colin's the only one. No, it's because he's blind. He doesn't know where to look.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
He's using his hearing instead of his eyesight for this type of thing. That could be. And
I like it.
I mean, it's something that I mentioned earlier. I don't remember in the real story whether they disposed of dirt in the attics, because you'd think that would be one of the places that the Germans would look. But they mention in the original book that one of the places where they put a lot of the dirt was they had an entertainment hut, which had a stage, and they actually put all the bags of dirt under the stage. They apparently got a lot in there. I don't remember the exact figures, but that makes sense. But then again,
yeah, absolutely.
I was wondering why in real life they would actually have hollowed out the bottom of the stage. Like, what would be the purpose of that? Unless they had a trap
maybe
door.
Storing sets, decorations, trapdoor stuff.
You know,
if they get
camp?
A magician on there.
In a prison camp?
Why not?
Maybe.
Yeah, really spruce it up. They said they wanted to wait out the war, so if you're going to wait it out, why not put some, you know what I mean, pizzazz in
that's
there?
True.
Get a little production value for your money.
Right, that's true. So, in other words, we didn't meet the magician. You know.
Not yet.
No, well, we never meet the magician.
Maybe we will.
The magician is actually the guy who escaped and nobody, nobody even knew that he escaped.
Yeah.
The escape artist.
Man, this bunk is warm, but I haven't seen anybody in it. I don't know.
The invisible man. Who knows? And so basically, it's amazing how much that the whole building is just moving from that. You know, I'd be interested in knowing if that really, if that is realistic. You know, I guess maybe.
It's got to be to an extent.
No, but it's really.
It's got to be, or they wouldn't have included it, right?
Well, I don't think everything is 100% accurate. Well, we know that not 100, everything is 100% accurate.
Yeah, that's true.
But the question is whether, you know, the ceiling. First of all, I would even think, how did they do the effects of that? Of making, the roof ripple like that?
I don't know. That's a really good question. Unless when it sets, it's an optical illusion, so they're really not sitting flat. They're sitting, like, slightly vaulted, so they're able to kind of pick up, and they can shift and move because... But then it does have a ripple thing, so it's not like you can... I don't know. Yeah. It's got to be something simple, though, that we're not thinking of, like, pulleys, and they can, like, it's loose on top, or... something, because I'm looking in corners and in like the back of the frame, and it's not like you see any gaps or any shifts like that. Everything just looks like naturally, like it would naturally move like that.
Yeah, exactly. And then I love how Henley like stands up and he basically is running out of the room.
Yeah.
he gets up really quickly. He's
oh yeah, let me go get that film. I'll be right back.
Yeah. I'll leave it at the door. I'm not coming back in here. Don't want to be there when the ceiling collapses.
Pretty much.
And so that's the end of that scene, and then we get to see Charles Bronson in the middle of one of the tunnels. You can see the trolley. You can see the little shovel that they use. You see the little lamp. You know, that they were able to make now. In the book, they describe that they made these lamps with margarine. They like had wicks with margarine that they light up. So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what's fascinating is you can see that he's basically at the very edge of the tunnel, and he's hooking this string up to it. Now, I'm curious of what is he actually hooking it up to. You know, he has to have something that's going to hold it really tightly in there.
They had to have something, like, dug really deep in there. Because I think in the very, very beginning of the movie, when they have some type of, I can't remember what the distraction is, but they're distracted. Somebody goes over, gets underneath the car, pulls out some rods, brings it back to one of the huts. So I'm thinking maybe it's one of those rods, like, dug way deep in there, and they got a little piece of string on it.
No, I'm sorry. I have to correct you on that one, Nick.
No, correct me, correct.
Henley went under the truck and took out the two rods, which, again, to this day, we still don't know what purpose those rods had in the truck, that you can take them off and nobody will miss them later on. That's a separate issue. But those rods were used for the pickaxe.
Ah, okay.
Because they used them to bent the rods in order to make the pickaxe that was used to break through into the tunnel in the first place. So nice try.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's right. When they picked up and moved the wood stove and everything.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
So yeah, sorry. Nice try.
Hey.
I apologize for correcting you. I know you've only seen this movie once.
No. No.
Yeah.
I'm glad you did, because if you hadn't corrected me, then it would look bad on you, because you've watched this how many times now?
I've lost count. It's part of the thing is that does it count that I've watched the same minute, you know, over and over and over? Does that mean if I've watched every minute, let's say 20 times in preparation, does that mean I've seen this movie 20 more times or not? I don't know, because I'm not watching them. I haven't watched them consecutively. No, but if I'm watching episode 77 20 times and then episode 78 20 times, it's not as if it's consecutive. So, I don't know. It doesn't matter. The point is that
The point is you're wrong. Let's move on, Nick.
No, that's not what I was saying. No, don't do that to me, Nick.
Oh, man.
All right, regardless, he found some way to anchor this piece of string into the wall, and he basically then moves. You know, it's an ingenious thing what they built here, to be able to do it. I'm assuming that people who are engineers or know these type of things are going to look at this and say this is a very old method and stuff like that. I'm not familiar with it, so you know, I liked the way that they did it. That here you have this string that has all of these different markings on it. You see like little flags along the way. There's red flags and there's blue flags and there's black flags. And you know, as he's moving along and the whole thing's unraveling, so you constantly can see the little markers along the way. And he moves through the tunnel. Now, first of all, they give us a great view of the tunnel while he's doing this. I'm gonna even go back further and say, the first thing you can notice is how strong Danny is, that he's able to actually move along just by using one hand. You know, he's pulling himself through this whole tunnel with one hand. And as he's going through, you can see all of these different chambers in the tunnel along the way. So I think this is a great way of giving the viewer a visual of what it must feel like inside this tunnel as they're moving along.
Yeah, and how really arduous the task is, because he's not like he's, you know, flinging himself. He's only going a couple rungs at a time as if he's going up a ladder. But like you said, the strength is there because he's only using one arm. It even shows it's not like he's also using his feet to kick along. Right. He's just, you know, like a board rolling along here. And I think it's just really cool to see that. And I'm glad they took the time.
Yes.
To show you, like, look how much work they've been doing. Look how long this tunnel is. And you can also see how, like, primitive some spots of it are and how much more advanced other ends of it are. Like, as he gets closer, you know, there's more slats up and down the side showing the supports, and it's just a better and, like, built-out design.
Right. And, I mean, I love the fact that he keeps stopping along the way also in order to pull the rope or the string more taut.
Yeah, the slack.
To make sure that there is no slack in order for them to get, you know, an accurate or as accurate as possible reading of the whole thing. And the shot keeps changing, because we get side views, we get front views. You know, they didn't give us a back view.
Yeah. Just feet going away. Yeah, it's not a Tarantino feet. Film.
That's right. No, but then they'd have to be barefoot feet.
Ah, that's true. That is true.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because today I just watched, I think, 6 Tarantino movies. So, yeah. Perfect timing for that one.
What do you know?
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, this gives a great view of the interior of this tunnel. We get to see the lights. You know, you get to see the, you know, how much lighting they put up. I mean, we just mentioned the fact that these candles were made out of margarine, but you can see at what intervals they have all of these lights in order to keep even someone like Danny, who's somewhat claustrophobic, which nobody knows about, we're able to get a feel for what he has to go through as he's traveling through this tunnel both ways. And the music does a great job here also, because it adds more tension and mystery the way that the music is played here.
Yeah, the way the piano is, and then you have that, it almost sounds like a whistle. You know what I mean? Like a train coming into station and whistles being blown by a conductor. Mm-hmm. I can't, there's just something about that too. And it adds this level of danger. And it's like, well, wait, is he in danger? Like, what could he possibly be doing right now that is dangerous? So to add that extra level of tension, even in a scene where they're just measuring something, I think is really speaks to the filmmaking and it speaks to the score.
Yeah. And then right at the end of the minute, we get to see Danny actually sort of speeding up, and he is vaulted out of one of the entranceways, which he basically, it's one of the stations, because you can actually see the air pump when he gets in there. Mm-hmm. So it actually is I think the very first station that they get to. But you see that he basically has picked up speed along the way. So we were talking before about the strength that he had in his arm to pull himself across. So he just does an amazing job of that by picking up the momentum and the inertia along the way to finally, you know, spring himself along further.
It's also some of that drive too, because if it's that claustrophobia, he wants to get out of the tunnel. He can see the end. He's going to be getting it a little bit more.
Right. Now, what I wonder is how did they do this scene? Because if they didn't really build a tunnel this length. So if you look at the spool, it does unravel.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it doesn't look like it's constantly full. It's not as if they created a spool of 1,000 feet, and, you know, whatever we get, all right, we can just pretend that we get it. They don't. You know, and when he comes into this final area, you can see that there isn't that much string left on the spool itself.
Mm-hmm. I think they built one set, and it's a tunnel, and it's connected to the station, or the first like main area. When he first leaves, we're seeing one angle of that, and then he gets to that little abutment, and then the second long shot that we see, I think he's in that same tunnel. It's just a different angle.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I would love to see it though. Like, I would love to be a fly on the wall and see like how they're filming the shot on the set, how they built it. You know, characters getting in and out, and I love little stuff like that.
There isn't really anyone around who we can ask.
Unfortunately, be cool though.
Because, as you know, because you've already heard the show a few weeks ago. So I had my interview with David McCallum. So, you know, he told me certain aspects of the production, but he didn't touch upon this at all, because I don't even think Ashley Pitt's not really that much in the tunnel itself. Oh, actually, I probably forgot to ask him about that. So, oh well, we'll never know. So basically, he comes into the final station, and Danny then sees both Sedgwick and our good friend Cavendish, who's looking through some sort of contraption, and that's basically how this minute ends. Did you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
No, I just, at first I thought it was really neat when they were moving along the camera with him, like as he's moving and drawing, the camera's going with, and for a split second in my mind, I just had this like Wes Anderson-ish like scene play out in my head where he's going to be going in all these weird, bizarre different directions, and we're going to see characters popping out of the dirt, but it was kind of, I don't know, it was just fun all around to see like a tunnel scene like this, and the fact that they took their time with it, like they could have had... bunch of cuts.
They took 45 seconds. We get a 45-second run of Danny through this tunnel.
Yeah.
And which, as I said, I think it's more to try and establish this is what the tunnel looks like.
Absolutely. And
you know, to give the viewer a visualization that we're not talking about just a few feet. We're talking about something that's quite long, and it took a lot of effort to get to the point of where they have gotten to.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think some might find it tedious, but I, for one, definitely appreciate it.
Me too. What a surprise. All right, great. So you want to once again tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Absolutely. Find me on Twitter at TheRehack, T-H-E-R-E-H-A-K. I've also, very recently, there was an episode of Movies, Films, and Flicks with Mark Hoffmeyer. We recorded an episode where we drafted our favorite songs from the Purple Rain and Tron Legacy soundtrack. So check that episode out when you get a chance. It's a whole lot of fun.
What's the connection between those two movies that you chose them together?
So there was an episode we did a couple weeks ago where if you were stuck on a desert island, what would your five movie soundtracks be? And he brought up Tron Legacy, I brought up Purple Rain, and we got into a discussion about how much we love those soundtracks. And he said, well, what if you could only, you know, take songs from either of those two? And it just devolved into this really big, obnoxious bit, and it made us laugh harder and harder and harder. So finally we were like, you know what, let's just focus. Let's just focus on these two scores for absolutely no reason.
Wow. It was okay. So great. Excellent. So people should go check that out.
No, absolutely. If they want that. A good absurdist laugh, check it out.
Well, you can get that from any episode from Mark.
That's true.
All right. Well, while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe to any podcatcher that you might be using to listen to this show. You can visit our website, thegreatescapeminute.com. Our Facebook group is The Cooler. Our Twitter account is greatescapemxm. And our email address is thegreatminute@gmail.com. So, until tomorrow, tally-ho!
Tally-ho!